Blog Talk Radio.
This is world champion D.E. Chambers, president of the Amateur Organization of Karate and multi-Greek Award winner. I would like to welcome you to Professor Gary Lee's Katanon Radio Talk Show, featuring news, special announcements, special one-on-one interviews with stars of sport karate. Thank you for listening. Buckle up and enjoy the show.
This program is sponsored by the American Martial Arts Alliance Foundation and Elite Publications. Everyone has a story. You just have to get it out. Visit Elite Publications at www.elitepublications.org.
Well, aloha, everybody, and much mahalo. This is Professor Gary Lee from the Sport Karate Museum on Parts Unknown, AMAA Live Radio. We are so honored to be in your home this evening and need to listen to us. We've got an incredible show planned. But as always, I get to introduce my producer. The man who has put me on the air for almost 10 years, in front of thousands of people across the world, talking about sport karate. And I have him on the air right now. Hachi Jesse Bowen. Hachi Bowen?
Hey, sir. What we do is ask our guests to please mute their phones if they have any background noise. You know, if you're not on, please mute your phone. Hey, Professor, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Hachi. How are you? And, you know, that darn mob radio, you got to have that mute button if you're not talking. And I appreciate you sharing that with my listeners or the people who are calling in of the five. But, you know, we get ready for a new year. We got some amazing things going on. But as normal, you've got some amazing things going on. I saw the Extraordinaire magazine, and, you know, that tell our listeners about what's going on with magazine now.
Well, yes, sir. Well, you know, the magazine now we're going into our second year. It's turned into an award-winning magazine, and, you know, it's really sharing a different perspective on the martial arts because, you know, it's really about the who's who in the martial arts and all the people that we have that participate in our books. It's about legacy telling. It's got information, you know, everything from about how to become an author to how to run your martial arts school. We have a lot of different guests. You know, we're doing something totally different this year with the magazine. You know, I call it Not the Famous Magazine, meaning that we're creating the magazine to help martial artists market and brand themselves in their community. We actually have an interchangeable cover. And this allows for us to change the cover picture, insert an article, and reproduce the magazine, and then giving the martial arts school owners an opportunity to build credibility, giving them a voice by being featured on the cover of the magazine, by have an article advertisement in the magazine. But instead of being focused nationally, for the magazine to be focused in their community, helping them be able to build their brand in their community. You know, we advertise on social media, and that, you know, that's very limited. You know, you pay paid advertisement, and 7 days, it's already gone. But having a magazine that you can give the parents when they sign up with an article about you, you on the front page, that will inspire people to want to become a part of your martial arts school. And because, number one, you know, you're published. And when you're published, you gain credibility. And so, you know, we're adding some of those things in this year. You know, we have the Roku channel. It's up. I haven't announced the link, but to become an author podcast and several other things we're adding on there. You know, we're joining partners with your guest tonight. You know, we have formed a partnership with their online program and looking to do some work with that. So we're really looking to really get the word out there about not just the martial arts, but who are the martial artists, how has the martial arts impacted their lives, and what can you learn by studying the martial arts. So we're going to be starting a program that's called Martial Arts Extraordinaire, which has the same name as the magazine, but that's really just to, you know, people are doing some extraordinary things, and for them to tell their story and motivate others.
Well, leave it to Hansi Decibo and the club with an incredible idea for the world. God bless you, sir. And thank you so much for what you've done for the Sport Karate Museum and what you're doing. And I'm looking for you to be one of the guest speakers this year at the youth conference in October. And I wanted to ask you one more thing, sir. If someone wanted to get a book or wanted to have to do a podcast, I know you're an expert in that too. Tell people how they would get involved with that, please.
Well, the easiest way to do it is go to our website, which is elitepublications.org. Schedule a time, an appointment with us, and I'd be more than happy to sit down and to discuss a book idea, or if you want to be involved in podcasting or anything that we are doing that you'd like to have information on, then, you know, schedule that time, and that's www.elitepublications. And schedule a time and love to sit down and talk with you and discover how you can, you know, make a difference in the world and also make a difference in your life, you know, because, you know, becoming an author, being involved in podcasts, being able to monetize those things, you know, that's really it's really a great opportunity for you personally to be able to advance yourself.
Well, thank you for your vision, and thank you for what you're doing for the community of martial artists, and of course, your support of the Sport Karate Museum like you have all these years. And I'll talk to you real soon, Hansi, okay?
Yes, sir. Be blessed.
You bet. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Hansi Decibo, the producer of Parts Unknown, our radio program. Now, did AJ get the call in yet?
I'm here. Do you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, AJ. Let me introduce you. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a couple of guys I asked, my six, to always watch my back when I'm on the air. And they've been doing a hell of a job for the past few years. And the man that I'm going to introduce now, he's been here for, I think, almost 2 years. We met years
almost
ago.
Almost three.
3 years, okay. I was counting on a little bad. Anyway, he is one of these amazing men that performs. And, guys, you know that I know quite a few live shows in my day, and I know performers. And I picked on the fact this guy was the real deal. Plus, he happened to be a master at Tang Soo Do, a Korean martial arts. And then he also became an advocate speaker for me, speaking to representatives of the military group that I do through the Sport Karate Museum. We became very good friends. He came and competed in Kata Wars. He came and performed. He is one of my, and I'm one of being one right now, Mr. A.J. Perry. A.J., you there?
I don't think my head's going to fit through the door now.
Well,
thank you for my introduction.
You need to put the check in the mail. I'll be waiting. Okay. Anyway, AJ, I don't want you to go too far away tonight, because after I do my guest speaking, I want to talk about a subject that deals with uniforms, and I know you got an opinion on it, so stay close, okay? And then,
yeah. You
know, Dean hadn't called in yet, so find out where Dean is and tell him I love him, and I'll talk to you guys in a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, the other gentleman that we're waiting on is Dean Piles from Florida, and he's also part of the co-host that I asked to watch my sec, and hopefully he'll be calling a little bit later. But I got AJ, so he'll be here all throughout the night. Now, I get to introduce a person I met. I think it was at the Battle of the 50th anniversary obviously the Joe Louis Eternal Award. Rob, are you there? Rob Fletcher, are you there, buddy?
Can you hear me?
Okay, did you put me on mute?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Rob, did we meet? We met at the Battle of Atlanta, the 50th anniversary. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes. What a great day! What a great event that was, and
yeah,
it was a pleasure to meet so many great martial arts people.
Joe's Eternal Award. Now, tell me a little bit about your background. You said you trained in Kung Fu and Kyokushin. Tell me how you came together.
Started late in teenage years, and Grandmaster David Lee here in New York. I met him. I was just strolling through NIAC, New York, and came across the school. I was very intrigued, and that's where I started. Then I transferred over to Kyokushin with Danny Shulman, which he was at that time breaking away, I believe, from the organization, forming his, at that time, was American Karate, and that's where I stayed. And then ultimately, years went by, fought competitively, and then opened up my school in Naples, Florida, USA Karate and Fitness. And then at that time, I was, doing all sorts of different types of martial arts, grappling, jiu-jitsu, Krav Maga.
Now, are you still
implementing these different?
No,
I'm no longer in Naples, but I do plan on making that return for sure. Especially right now, we have a major storm impacting the New York area here. So hopefully there'll be a delay in any power outage.
Yeah. Well, I have some friends in Naples. Now, you said that you fought competitively. Was it strictly in Kyokushin, or were you fought in the
World Associated Kickboxing Organization. Was at the time Don Rodriguez and Tom Festa, Coach Tom Festa.
Okay. You said Don Rodriguez. Oh, Don and I are very good friends. How long have you known Don?
Oh, very, very, very long time. Don and Tom I know for a long time. I went over to Germany with them I think it was 1995. Which was a great experience, at the time, of course, Willie Bam Johnson, Carl Romaine, Mike Chattaratabut. So a lot of great, great, great martial artists. So I had the fortune
friends with Michael. Let's go back to Don. Don runs the Ocean State, and Don and I brought in a couple of years ago John Paul Gennaro, and we honored him with an honorary black belt and stuff, and Christine came in, Steve Babcock, Rocky DiRico. From that group, yeah. And that's some pretty good people that you mentioned. That's pretty cool. Michael Chan read about, we go back a long time. We go back to the 80s competing against each other. And in fact,
it was incredible watching him. Yeah,
Michael was amazing. Michael came from John Sharkey's group in Chicago, and the AKA guys. And I'll tell you a funny story. Back in 1997, Gary Alexander from New Jersey, he nominated me for the Bible Magazine Hall of Fame Competitor of the Year. And Michael Chatham had met my buddy John Valera, tied. And they won it in 1997. And do you remember John Valera?
I sure do, yeah.
Yeah, they were good people. We
great people.
John and I were on the Mortal Kombat tour. I was Guru, and he played Liu Kang. And we traveled, and a lot of fun. And those are great competitors. Now, you fought. Were you a fighter or a colleague or both?
Yeah, fighter, kickboxing, kickboxing.
Oh, so you did point tournament and kickboxing?
Yeah.
Okay. Both. Did you ever fight PKA or WKC or WKA or
no,
PKC?
Just with the World Association of Kickboxing Organization. American Karate Association also. I don't know if you're familiar with that or back then.
Ernie Lee, who invented the AKA, the American Karate Association. I was friends with him up to his death. But he got killed in the train wreck in Germany. And but yeah, that's a lot of good memories. Now, what are you doing now?
Presently, I work with Muscle and Fitness, as I mentioned. You know, turn of events throughout the course of the year is pretty interesting. And so I was fortunate enough to just meet some really, really great people. My true inspiration and satisfaction came from teaching martial arts, especially back then, because of the impact that you have, you know, make as an instructor on, you know, whether it's the tiny tiger, you know, the 4 or 5 year old, all the way up to the senior citizen. But there's so many great stories that come from that. But one thing led to another with me. I was fortunate enough to get to television, hosting several shows, and then leading to a talk show radio. Then I was involved, as I said, in TV and film, leading to launching two big events, one at the Arnold Sports Festival, where I was actually the first sport outside of bodybuilding back in 1992 to perform at the Arnold, leading me to invite Mitch Barbaro and Don Rodriguez and Michael DePasquale to put on the first sport outside of bodybuilding. So that turned into be the first sport, which had then evolved into 80 sporting events, turning into the largest. They turned it from the Arnold Bodybuilding Classic into the Arnold Sports Festival. And at that time, it grew to, I believe, 80 sporting pre-COVID, 80 sporting events, 20,000 competitors, 300,000 attendees that would go in,
Rob, I'm very familiar with that because back in the day when Choi ran it with Arnold and the people that produced it,
correct.
They brought me in and I actually did a couple festivals there and got my 9th degree black belt from Michael DePasquale Jr. and Sr. before he passed. In fact, you mentioned a couple people that I got to talk about. Michael DePasquale, Jr. and Sr. I was their last 9th degree black belt before Mr. DePasquale, Sr. passed away. And then I got to honor Michael and roast him in New Jersey back in the day. And then you mentioned Mitchell Barbo, my buddy from Atomix. Well, better known
I just saw Mitch coincidentally in Las Vegas for the first time, I don't even know in how many years. I think the last time I saw Mitch, he was holding a baseball bat for me in California because that was one of the breaking demonstrations. So we had great history.
He was one of the youngest competitors. I think he was like 17 or 18 when he fought
great guy.
Like Joe Lewis and Victor Moore. And he was pretty
cool. Mitch is
cool.
Awesome. And of course, Joe Corley was with him as well.
He invented the Atomix, the shoe, and the company that went
very
crazy.
Very successful.
Yeah, very successful. Now, you mentioned Mr. Corley. Joe Corley has been my mentor and actually been my personal friend since 1971.
Incredible human being.
Funny story, Rob. You'll love this story. Okay. I was living in Sam Chapman's basement in South Carolina, and Sam came in one day, and he goes, "Gary, we're going to go to Atlanta, Georgia, and work out with a friend of mine who's going to fight a friend of mine, and you're going to love it." Okay, Sam, because, you know, we fought pretty hard back then anyway, and I was already a Kyokushin black belt at 14. So anyway, we go to Atlanta, Georgia, to the Peachtree Dojo, and that's where I meet Joe Corley and Jeff Smith, and he was getting ready to fight Bill for his first fight. Now, this is a long time ago. And Joe, honestly, Rob, Joe beat the crap out of me, man. He was so cool. He came out with a pair of shorts, all the shin gear and arm pads and stuff. You know, I never fought this type of fighter before. And I got introduced to kickboxing really cool, but I feel some of the best. Now, what are you doing? Do you have a dojo where you live at now? Where do you live
no,
at
no, no, no longer, yeah. So I left Naples in 2004 without getting into the personal side of things. 9/11 happened, and my family was in New York. You know, I left my father's construction business to pursue my passion for martial arts and fitness. So I moved to Naples, opened up a gym and a martial arts school, as I said, or leaving the construction company. 9/11 happened, and short story. I had no idea they were still alive. They were at actually Seven World Trade Center the day it happened. So we didn't know that they were around until the next day. So as soon as the planes were back up, I flew back home. And I will tell you, the first time, I don't have to really emphasize this because people have that visual, going over the GW Bridge and looking down the river and not seeing the towers there, because my father did a lot of work in the towers with the construction company. And then being away from my family, that just changed my whole mind. And I loved what I do. I still love what I do. Martial arts has been great to me. I continue to promote it. I continue to do whatever I can for martial arts instructors and school owners. But to answer your question, at that time, I went back. I guess it was like a year or two later. I really wanted to be back home with my family. So in 2004, I moved back to New York.
Cool. Well, listen, I don't want you to go anywhere. I'm going to bring you back at the end of my segment, and we're going to play the Legends Name Game. This is where I'll say a name, Rob, and you get to talk about them. That's how I close my show out. So I'll be back in just a few minutes with you, okay?
You got it. Thank you.
You bet. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to Mr. Rob Fletcher, my friend that's in the hot media status of the Kyokushin Black Belt. And, you know, a man I met at the Battle of Atlanta when I received the Joe Louis Saturn Award. Great memories. But, you know, ladies and gentlemen, the neat thing about doing live radio, you get to bring together an amazing group of people. And I get to do that every week. And we're called the Five. Five incredible martial artists from across the country. And we get to talk about various topics. And I get to introduce them. The first person I'd like to introduce is a lady from Dallas, Texas, a ladies champion, someone I've known from the early 70s. She, you know, I'm not making this up, she used to fight men in competition. And she actually has a world title in a division, I guess, with the most kicks or punches. Anyway, one day we'll talk about that, but the bottom line is she's on my show, and I get to introduce her. Bordis, are you there? Bordis, you put me on mute. You there?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Good evening, everyone. How's everyone doing?
Good evening, Bordis. Bordis, the topic guy is real simple. How do you feel about the styles of martial art uniforms we've gone through the years? We all started wearing white. They went to salt and pepper, black and white. Some people wore black, most of the Kempo guys did. And then the satin uniforms like Junior invented. Then we had the color uniforms, the red, white, and blue uniforms. And then, of course, all the patches and the kung fu shoes, the ring star shoes, kung fu, some comics. How do you feel about that? Does that affect your career at all?
Oh, it absolutely did. Most certainly did. As you know, I'm old school, and so and the school that I began training in was run by a U.S. Marine that trained in Okinawa. It was very military school. And so, I mean, we did not even get to where that was instilled in me from the very beginning. And so I didn't realize how militant mentally I had become in training, you know, with him. But now that I'm older and I look back on that, and you ask the question that you asked, like, how do I feel
about satin uniforms and different colors and the red, white,
and
blue.
I have to say that I'm traditional. I like white, starched, clean white, the traditional ghee. But I do love the colors. Now, I personally go with just white still and or black, solid black, or mix it. But I do like the colors. I like them. But to me, it's like for a traditional or a special event, I think we need to be more traditional. It would be like asking, having something, an event in the military and having someone come in different colored attire than what is the norm and the tradition in the martial arts. Karate.
Well, the changes of uniform styles and all the patches and saying you can wear shoes and competition, it was a controversial time. And I feel that as long as you're representing your art, no matter what you're wearing, it's important. And I know that some people were crazy, put a bunch of patches, have no idea what they wore on their uniforms, and they would misuse it. And then they, I don't know, I'm a fanatic about it. But listen, I hope you had a great new year, and I'll talk to you real soon, Bordis, okay?
Thank you so much. Thank you. Good evening, everyone.
You're welcome, honey. Karen, did you get on by chance yet?
Yes, sir. And so I couldn't get
okay, let me introduce you. Let me introduce you, Karen. Ladies and gentlemen, we have another lady of our group called The Five. And she has been with me from the very beginning. She is one of the original history generals. She trained in Shaolin Karate Do, and also now she's exclusively training in Kung Fu. Now, she is a PKL champion. Back in the day, the Professional Karate League was one of the most dominating circuits we had, and she was the champion. And she now lives North Carolina. So let's go there and we'll introduce this Karen Slasher. Karen, you there, huh?
Yes, Uncle Gary, I'm here. I do apologize. What? We have tornadoes overhead and I couldn't get through before.
But well, I heard you guys out with the storm. And
I
made a point that said that you're the always almost the first person to call in. So I was worried about you. So anyway, let's talk about uniforms. They went from white to black and white to all black, the Kimball guys, and then went to satin with Jude Reed's invention, and then, of course, the red, white, and blue, like the flag.
Oh, yeah.
Green, purple, yellow, and then went to knit. It was crazy, and all the patches. And then the
right.
Kung Fu shoes, so Thomas, Ring Star. Did it affect your career? How do you feel about that?
Okay, I grew up, like Lord has said, in totally white gi. That's all we could have. And in the Shorinru system I was in, when you hit black belt, you could wear black pants, or if you wanted to. You could go the black and white, but that was even in the 60s. You had to be a Shodan at least. So I always wanted that. I love that look. And then it was Peter Urban, Master Urban, who came to New York, who went totally American karate. So he took the white gis and threw them out and put all of his people in solid black gis. And that was provocative. People went crazy. You can't do that. And they wouldn't let him into tournaments after a while when he first did it. Yeah, so he's the one that really started as a rebellion, as a fighting back, a vengeance almost, saying, if you won't take us, and he'd show up with 30 people. They're not going to turn away 30 people at a tournament, that.
That's a lot of interesting, without a doubt. Well, I got to tell you a story. You know, I'll take a little bit about me. Our listeners will enjoy it. Do you remember the movie Sidekick?
Yes.
With Chuck Norris and
I filmed
it in L.A. and Houston, and part of the sequence at the end of the movie, all the karate competitors in the movie had to wear the same uniform if they're on the same team. And the movie, you know, the choreographers and the set designers, they all picked out uniforms for each five members of different teams. I think there was like 30 teams. So we're all waiting in line, and I'm waiting in line. It's like a two-hour wait. It's crazy. Finally, it's my turn. And Rick Pirito, the stunt choreographer for the movie Sidekicks, and Aaron Norris, Chuck's brother, was the director. And so it's my turn. And Rick Pirito says, "Okay, Gary, here's your uniform top." And I looked at it. I said, "Rick, I can't put that on." It was a Taekwondo black top with all the lapels on it. You know, the black lapels. And I go, "I can't put that on. That's a Korean top." And he goes, "Gary, no, 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 no. You're on contract. You got to be in the sequence of the movie. You got to put on this top because everybody on your team is wearing this top." I say, "Rick, how am I going to explain?" Because I was ignorant. I go, "How am I going to explain that to all my friends who know I do Japanese karate do, and I'm wearing a Korean top?" And Rick didn't call. He called Aaron, but he didn't tell him my name. He says, "Aaron, there's an actor here." He called me an actor. He says, "There's an actor here that won't put on the gi top. He needs to wear it for the sequence." And without Aaron knowing it was me, they said he threw the walkie-talkie across the set. He was so mad. When he picked it back up, he goes to the walkie and he says, "Okay, Rick, who is it? Who is it?" And Rick goes, "It's Gary." And Aaron goes, "Gary Lee?" And Rick goes, "Yeah, it's Gary Lee." He says, "Does he have his hakama and his gi-top he's been working out with Mako with?" And I looked at Rick and I go, "Yeah, I got that, of course." And Aaron goes, "He can wear that." So in the movie, at the end of the movie, you can see I'm the only guy wearing a hakama and a black knee top that says Hawaii in the back. Because I wouldn't put on that Tang Su Do top. You know?
I know a lot of people that wouldn't have. Yeah.
Well,
but it's
I was under contract.
Gary, if you took that put that Tang Su Do top on, you never would have taken it off.
Well, you're funny, AJ. Well, you know, it was funny because I got to wear my hakama, my traditional black gi top all through the end of the movie, and it was really cool because, you know, everybody kind of got upset at me a little bit because they were jealous, I guess, so they get to wear their uniform and they had to wear the mandatory gi top. But anyway, it was funny. But anyway, Karen, thank you for your opinion and your attitude.
Okay, thank
I'll
you.
See you next week. See you next
all
week.
All right.
Thank you.
All right,
ladies,
bye-bye.
Gentlemen, I've got now part of five. This man is an American hero. He's a Silver Star earner. He's a Marine. Hurrah! He's also a personal advisor for the Sport Karate Museum, part of the Military Advisory Board for our yearly acknowledgement to people in the military. And I want to bring him right now, Colonel Phil Torres. Colonel, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
You're welcome.
Oh, Colonel.
It's a show tonight.
Hello.
Because you trained Okinawa, I'm sure that was all white. But did the uniform colors or the patches or did you wear shoes when you compete? Did it affect your journey in any way, sir?
I've had many experiences on both sides of the aisle. Through the 60s, it was all white, period. That's all I was associated with. That's all everybody who I trained with me, or we trained under, wore white. During the 70s, we started getting into different colors. We had black, and white, and then we had the, for many years, and I got into the into the gig just as much as anybody else with the red, white, and blue uniforms that Jeff Smith and many others wore. So, but you talk about Okinawa and traditionalists. In any sport, we're going to have traditionalists who believe as to how a particular activity or sport should be, people should behave traditionally. And we got, and we have modern, and on the other side, we have modern non-traditionalists who think differently. So, and I've seen that in many sports. At one time, I was so sold on being a traditionalist that I thought white or black were the only uniform that should ever be worn. But people around me were making the arguments that it's not what you wear, it's how you train that defines who you are and define whether you're a serious martial artist or you're not a serious martial artist. And then when you talk about Okinawa, even throughout the 1920s, because of the heat being semi-tropical island, people wore whatever they could stay cool in. So it wasn't a black or white or traditional gi. It was whatever they could wear to get through a workout and had a good workout, since Okinawa was always geared towards actual combat or defensive combat more so than Japan. So, but so even in Okinawa, even for those that we might call traditionalists, they did not wear a traditionalist uniform in the early 1900s.
Well, you know, I remember, well, in Hawaii, I remember one of the questions I asked when I was a kid, why are those guys wearing their uniforms and their pants so short? Or some of them, you know, are long, or why are some of them cut up to their kneecap? And I was told, this before I came to America, well, you know, when the Okinawans trained, they trained in the rice field. And so the ski pants were long, they get caught in the water and the rice. So they cut the pants so the knee, it would be up to the knee, so the leg would walk through the water clearer. I mean, I don't know how true that is. But then I came to America, and I saw some people in New York. And that's my first thought, I believe, where people would have their pants cut up to the knees. And I'm thinking, well, they knew the same thing that I was told in Hawaii. Now, I know how true that was, but it made sense, because I know that if the pant leg was wet, it would be harder to go through the rice field. Is that true?
It is true.
Cool.
Wearing any wet clothing will make it more difficult. Period.
Well, it makes sense. Now, were you in the early 70s when you were a Sikha? Did you get involved with having to wear? I mean, did you get the opportunity to wear shoes in competition, like the Ring Star?
Wore shoes in a competition, and neither did anybody that I competed with.
Yeah, well, see, some. Okay, I think it was
except for the Chinese styles.
Okay, in the late 80s, Steve Shepard and Fred Bullard with Kung Fu shoes and Atomics, they made a soft shoe that some tournaments allowed to be in competition. I mean, right. I was sponsored by Ring Star and T. Shepherd for 5 years. And I was the one that introduced Ring Star to the NBL. I mean, it was interesting, sir. And it was allowed, but it didn't last.
Right.
Because the bottom line is, your ball of your foot is your weapon, not the sole of your foot.
Absolutely. But I never wore and never thought about wearing any shoes, and neither did any of my friends, whether it's through the 60s, 70s, et cetera.
Well, the controversy, I believe, wearing a shoe was you couldn't kick with your heel, you couldn't kick with the blade of your foot, you couldn't kick with the ball of your foot, you couldn't kick with your toes. I mean, your foot is a literal weapon. So, anyway, thank you, sir, for your information and your opinion, and I'll see you next week. Hope you had a happy New Year, sir.
Yes, sir, I did, and another birthday wish for your lady.
Well, thank you. You know what's funny is that now that she turned 65, I said you can sit at the adult table now, then. Well, anyway, sir,
okay.
God bless you, and I'll see you next week. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Sure will.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Colonel Phil Torres. Now, carrying on with the five, this man has really been an inspiration to me personally for the past few years. Well, actually, the museum and myself got inducted as a historian for the United States Martial Arts Hall of Fame back in the early 2000s. And he is now the president of that organization, the United States Martial Arts Flapper Hall of Fame. And we got him on the weekly radio show. He's known as the Black Belt Leader, Dr. John Terry. John, you there?
I am here, my friend.
How are you tonight, John?
I am well, thank you. How are you?
Super, super. Now, how did the styles of the different colors of uniforms, the shoes, you know, the patches of uniforms, did that affect you at all in your journey?
You know, I've enjoyed listening to everybody share their stories tonight, Professor Lee, and I've thought about my own journey. When I started in the mid-70s, training in the martial arts, I started in a dojo school, and it was a very traditional school with the traditional heavy, heavy cotton gi, and that's what I became accustomed to. When I first started seeing the different types of gis come out, when I started competing in the various karate circuits, at first I was a little put back, but then I stopped and I thought, well, different styles can bring their own unique flair to what they do, and just was willing to accept those differences, because what mattered wasn't the uniform they wore on the outside. What mattered was the martial artists they were on the inside. And so watching over the years, as we've seen technology evolve, we've seen the ability for new fabrics to come in the traditional circuits that I competed in, if you were doing traditional forms, traditional weapons, traditional fighting, you fought in a traditional gi. If you were in the extreme forms or whatever they call it today, you could wear the other flashier gear, but you weren't allowed to mix it up. So if you're going to compete in traditional and then also compete in the extreme sports, you had to change gi before you represented either the traditional or what we would call contemporary today. But you know, again, it's been interesting to watch, and I think there's some beautiful costumes out there that we see today. The Chinese with the silk that they bring.
I remember back in the NBL days, I would change into five different, because I competed in like 10 different divisions. I would change into five different uniforms, and then when I became a Sherman Oak Raider, and our colors were black and gray, I wore my uniform for my team. But I was a fanatic, because in traditional karate you had to wear all white, and then
right.
Open division, you could wear what you wanted to wear. Of course, when we're fighting, I used to wear the rec suit. Do you remember the rec suit that was invented back
then?
I did,
yes. Yep.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's got these changes now. How do you feel about someone that puts 100 patches on their uniform? How do you feel about patches on their uniforms?
you know, when I compete, I wear one patch that represents the organization that I belong to and honors my teachers. I have an additional gi that I wear that has a couple of extra patches on it. But, yeah, again, it's, you know, everybody that wants to, you know, share their lineage and history, I get it. I'm not a big fan of seeing 500 patches on somebody's uniform that you look like something out of NASCAR. But, again, it's who is the individual on the inside, and are they doing it to be braggadocious, or are they doing it to pay homage and respect to the different organizations and different schools they've had an opportunity to train with and be a part of? That, to me, is the question I always like to ask, and why they wear the uniform that way.
You bet.
You know, Gary, I completely agree with him. You know, you get some of these multicolored uniforms, they're wearing 30 patches on a uniform. The only purpose for that is to draw attention to themselves. The white uniform
Absolutely.
Is perfect.
Most of the time, you're right, AJ. Yeah.
The white uniform is perfect. It's supposed to represent purity and purifying your spirit every time you train and in your life.
Yeah.
That's what it's supposed to represent.
Yeah,
it's perfect.
That's a good point, because that's what I was going to say. But, you know, Dr. Terry, I come from a, you know, I was a professional bass fisherman back in the day. And, but you wore a patch, it was because your sponsor would allow you to wear that patch. And in karate, I feel that people have abused that privilege where they put all these patches on their uniforms, and they might represent nunchucks or their style or whatever. But, you know, to put 100 patches on a uniform top, I believe what you said, to draw attention. And, you know, it's embarrassing. It really is. But, you know, golly bump. Thank you, Dr. Terry. Now, you had a good New Year, did you, sir?
I did. I had a fantastic New Year. I've been working on the release of a new book. And so I spent most of December locked away finishing up book number 8, The Black Belt Secrets of Success, and looking forward to rolling that out probably towards the end of Q1 this year.
Well, we're looking forward to the show in respect to you and the tribute to you in October 4th and 5th, and we'll be giving our listeners more detail than that coming up on the future shows. So you take care, Dr. Terry, please.
Absolutely. God bless you, my friend. Thank you for the opportunity to be on the show tonight.
You bet. Did Adam James get on yet? Okay, well, let me introduce you to Matt, well, he's a really incredible guy. I've been involved with this group for almost 7 years, and they're virtual reality. They're called VR, XL, Abyss, and it's virtual reality. It's taken an Oculus Quest 3 or Rift or the Apple Pro Vision and put it in this platform where you get to get beat up by a hologram. And then you get to go to the history general portals. Well, he's here to explain it. Now, he's a real doctor, ladies and gentlemen. He saves lives. He works in the hospital every day. But he also is a 9th-degree black belt underneath the Sport Karate Museum. And we put him in New Jersey, California, South Carolina, and Texas to bring him in every year for their Oscar's Quest and their platform of SetVR to introduce it to the world. But he's here to introduce it to you. Reggie, are you there?
Yes, I am, sir. How are you today?
Hey, Reggie, Happy New Year. Now, big guy, explain to my listeners exactly what is SetVR XL Unleashed, and how is the Sport Karate Museum involved? Go ahead.
Absolutely, sir. My developers, myself, my partners, Marie Shanahan and Rick Shanahan, are planning to be the first on your program to unveil a spectacular platform that definitely will make you fall off your chair, especially with multiplayer. Professor Garley, you'll be introduced, and we have excited to have you be introduced as the Wisdom Warrior, also as the Samurai Ninja. It is a program, a simulation program, as well as a program to educate the audience in regards to the amazing history journals that blazed the trail before us in sports karate. The program has been designed to help you develop a reflex response to get a sudden random attack, to neutralize without hesitation, to help you in your journey to be a faster interactive fighter while having fun in a simulation game-like program to be able to continue to practice anywhere anytime when you want. You can see a program, a demo of our program on Professor Ewer's program on your website, and we'll showcase the interaction of a hologram and a player on a headset against a sudden random attack to move reflexively during a reflex response to practice their skills in self-defense anytime, anywhere, when you want. With SetVR, you will be actually immersed into a simulation program, moving 360 degrees in a cutting-edge program whereby a hologram confronts and attacks you when you least expect it. At first, they will walk into your personal space to create an adrenaline effect. It is during this adrenaline surge, the fight or flight mode, one will normally have a momentary pause, losing 35, 40, 50% of what they've been taught, and whereby using reflex response and to neutralize attack to develop this skill at a top level to enhance your skills. And just like a metaphor, just like placing your hand on a hot stove, you move reflexively. And that's what the purpose of this program is, to help you to develop that reflex response to neutralize your attacker anytime, anywhere, when you want. The program has been enhanced, and we have introduced Professor Gary Lee as the Wisdom Warrior at the Gate of the History portal. But before meeting the Wisdom Warrior, one must be able to neutralize the hologram attacker at the Gate of History portal, and we're brought back into the core, to the area to meet the core history generals. And then, Professor Garley, you'll be discussing, and we'll see the history generals and their portals in regards to what they have done in their history in blazing the trail for sports karate. We're happy to have you on our program, and thank you for having us on your show, sir.
Well, you know, the vision that we have to SetVR is elders, respect, and knowledge. And with SetVR, you're allowing us to do it. Not only to enhance our training to physical combat wearing a headset, but also teaching the education of what and how sport karate came and was involved in America. And I want to thank you, Reggie. Thank you so much. I hope you had a great new year, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Now, we're going to have Dr. Lee on in our show coming up, where we have a full show just talking about SetVR here pretty soon. And we want to thank him and his team, his developers and co-inventors, Marie Shanahan and Rich Shanahan, for what they've done and helped build the Sport Karate Museum. With that said, I'd like to bring back my special guest of tonight, Rob Fletcher. Rob, you there?
Yes, I am, Professor. Thank you.
Okay, Rob, I'll get you those a couple names, and you can talk about them for a couple minutes, and I'm going to end this show with that. So you ready for the first name?
I hope so.
Masu Oyama, the inventor of Kyokushin Karate. Did you ever get to meet Mr. Oyama?
Unfortunately, no, but the impact that he has had, obviously, in the world of martial arts and specifically Kyokushin is extremely impactful, changing the lives of many, many people. I found a great form of art for myself, as I said, you know, starting with going back to Danny Shulman. Danny Shulman was a Kyokushin champion and training with Gary Hellman and his crew. So his impact is, needless to say, it's incredible what he's done with the Kyokushin organization.
Okay. Have you ever met Carlos Chuck Norris?
I have. So Chuck, as I mentioned earlier, Chuck is another person, obviously, he needs, you know, no words mentioned or necessary there for what he's done for martial arts and the human being that he is, the impact that he's made in martial arts. But Chuck is one of the people that came to the Arnold Sports Festival when we introduced the martial arts that year. I told you we brought Mitch in, Joe Corley, Don Rodriguez, you know, and the top promoters in the country to the Arnold, and we put on a great show. And Chuck actually came and he helped launch that martial arts component. I also met him in at the Cooper Clinic in Texas, in Dallas, Texas. He was out there. You know, Bill Wallace was there, and you know, had a great time there. So Chuck is a, so much respect for Chuck. He's a great influence in my life, the person that he is and all that he represents, the values that he brings back. Going back into some of the conversation earlier today, you know, it's so nice to think about the traditional days of martial arts, you know, what it was, even going down to the martial arts uniforms, you know, the purity of it and the, you know, simplicity of it, you know, of what it represented. So that has obviously evolved. But Chuck was, has been a great influence, as I said, in my life, and I'm thankful for what he has done to support me in my efforts at the Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, I got time. I got to tell you a really quick story. I love this. I was at a big national event in Texas, you know, back, I guess it was almost 15 years ago. And I saw this guy. He had all these patches on his uniform. And I saw a Kyokushin patch on his chest, on the left side of his body, upside down. Well, Rob, I went crazy. Back in the day,
wow.
Tadashi, he gave, you know, you had to earn those patches. You couldn't buy them. You couldn't buy them in a store.
Right.
And
right.
I went nuts on him, Rob. I went nuts on him. And I'll just be honest, I went nuts on him. That's all I'll say. But anyway,
no, well, were you sparring with him? Were you sparring with this guy?
No. He was. I had a booth. I was selling my equipment and stuff in the museum.
Okay.
And I made, I took it off. And it really is something because, you know, back in the day, I earned my first two Kyokushin badges from Tadashi. And it really affected me. Plus, he put it upside down. He had no idea what he was wearing. It was really funny because he went to, I guess, to a computer after I did what I did to him. And he came back and he apologized. And he realized that Zenik, whatever, and I had a reason to be upset. And he apologized for it. But he told me that he had bought them because he thought they were cool.
Well, that's
he had no idea that he had
hear
put
that.
Them up by now. That's funny. But listen, thank you for being on the show tonight, Rob. Thank you for being on the show. Now, if anybody
thank you for the opportunity. Thank you.
If anybody wanted to get in contact with you or just talk to you about anything, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, probably the easiest way to remember is my Instagram, which is ANGTTV, ANGTTV. And again, Rob Fletcher. And then if you pretty much Google my name, Rob Fletcher Martial Arts, Rob Fletcher Fitness, you know, I should pop up. LinkedIn and all the social media platforms as well. So be happy to speak with all my fellow martial artists out there. And again, Professor, I can't thank you enough for this great honor and privilege to be on your program. And thank you for all that you do and your crew, including Grandmaster Jesse Bowen, for all that he has done, a great influence in this world of martial arts. So I tremendously thank you for your efforts. Keep this martial arts alive and going strong and keep the values and building the indomitable spirit to never quit and give up and keep driving forward.
Well, thank you, Rob. And I wish you a very, very prosperous and happy new year in 2024. And I'll talk to you real soon, sir, okay?
Thank you. Right back at you, Professor. Thank you. Have a great night.
You bet. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Rob Fletcher. And you know, we've had a great show tonight. And we want to thank everybody that supports, you know, our radio show. And remember, go to www.sportkaratemuseumarchives.com and see what everybody's talking about. You know, we really would love to have you visit our site. There's videos, pictures of all the history generals, stories, bios, history. You'll enjoy it. And we say this to you every week, and we appreciate you so much. Much, much mahalo and aloha. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Happy New Year to all.
Good night.
Happy New Year.